What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal King Podcast. This is episode number 94. All right, so my guest today, it was just such a fun conversation. She's so easy to talk to, but she's also got a mass following. She's helped thousands and thousands and thousands, literally tens of thousands of people regain their health, their weight, their mindset. Just such a cool opportunity to be able to talk to my guest today. Also, the way that we met is a really funny story. Let's just say she thought my wife was looking good at a party we were at. So you'll hear it. She talks about it. But anyways, I know you guys are going to love this episode. Also, I want to let you know, we are restocked at crossomeats.com. What I want you to check out right now is a subscription. I know it's a pain to maybe go to the grocery store and sift through the green meat, figure out what's good, what cuts do you actually want. No, literally for right around $100 a month, you can have every single month amazing mountain-raised, dry-aged, premium beef shipped directly to you, or you can come pick it up here at the ranch. Either way, for less than $300 a month, you can have a whole bunch of meat. If you got a bigger family like me, again, you don't have to go to the grocery store to get any of your beef. It will be delivered to your door at the beginning of the month. Plus, you save money. You get some really, really cool stuff. Literally, guys, this is the opportunity that you need to go take care of right now. Just go to crossomeats.com. Figure out which subscription fits you, fits your family best, and never have to worry about a grocery store, traffic, any of that garbage that we all hate. We know we all hate it. So again, go to crossomeats.com, look at the subscriptions, find the one that works best for you, and never have to worry about having the best beef on the planet coming to you without even worrying about it. All right, let's get started. So the question is this: how do we live the best life that we can with the limited amount of time that we get to be here? Is it by accumulating success and fame and fortune and everything else that society tells us that we need in order to be fulfilled? Or is it much more simple than that? My name is Derek Wilson. I'm the host of the Primal King Podcast, and we're going to be answering this as well as many other questions as we move forward. All right, welcome back, everybody. Today we have an awesome guest that I know you are going to love. This is someone who started in the fitness industry back in 1993 and then went on to become a professional boxer 10 years later and had 15 professional fights all around the world. She was named by Ring Magazine one of the top three most dangerous females on the planet, which ended up landing her on the hit MTV series Made. After having huge success on the show, she began training celebrities, business tycoons, models, professional athletes, all in New York City, and in 2008 was actually named by Allure Magazine New York's best trainer. She retired from boxing in 2010 and launched the Code Red Lifestyle. Since then, she's gone on to write a massively successful book, The Code Red Revolution, help change the lives and futures of thousands of people who follow her no-nonsense, straightforward, and easy-to-follow lifestyle changes, and I am excited to chat with her today. Welcome, Christy Nickel, aka Christy Code Red. Again, Christy, thanks for coming on.
Derek, I realize that I have met you. The way I met you is I pretty much hit on your wife at a party.
Yeah.
I did. I was like, this girl has got such a great body. And she did. And I love when I see a woman with a really great body. I mean, I might make a beeline tour and say, you got a great body. And so that's kind of how we met. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for this.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I know you're like, man, you're like, you look really good. And I'm like, hey, what about me? I mean, come on.
Yeah, I know better than that. Like,
yeah. Funny. Well, again, super excited to have you. So I guess maybe just to start with, if you wouldn't mind, because kind of what got you into this and I think what attracts people to you so much is, you know, your mindset and kind of just like your no nonsense, like just approach to stuff. I think it's simple, it's easy to follow, but I'm also very, very curious about being a professional boxer. So I guess like going all the way back to then, maybe when you first got into fitness, was this something that like you saw yourself even as a younger person, like into fitness, or was there something happened that kind of pushed you into fitness and ultimately into boxing and all of that? Or how did that start?
Oh, that's really great question, because I haven't heard anybody ask me like that before. So I was raised on a ranch in northern Idaho, and we were very poor. My dad was our local sheriff. My mom, we just didn't have any money raising three girls, and we had a big ranch, and you know, it was a great life, but it was just, we were very poor. So when I graduated high school and I wanted to go to college, I desperately wanted to be a nurse. And when I wanted to go to college, nobody paid my way and we didn't get anything. I bought my first horse at 9 years old, making $50 monthly payments to my neighbor. So we've been working and I was working my way through college. I mean, nobody was helping me. I was bartending, I was waiting tables, and I was putting myself through nursing school. And I took a boxing class at a local Y. I had done 3 bodybuilding competitions. I got a trophy behind me on my wall. I wasn't spectacular at it because I didn't really know what I was doing, but I took a boxing class as a way to try, because I've always loved fitness, as a way to kind of, you know, change things up a little bit. So I was kind of boxing like this, you know. I wasn't really, nobody's good on their first class. And a guy walks in, he was the actual boxing coach. He was watching me and he said, "How long you been boxing?" I said, 44 minutes. And he said, "Well, you have a propensity for this." Well, now that I'm a coach, I understand what he means. You know, some people just get it. And he said, "You should fight." And I was like, "Pal, I'd never been in a fight. I'm not interested in fighting. I don't know anything about fighting." And he said, "But you could earn money." And I said, "I'm sorry, what was that? Could you speak into my good ear?" And I started fighting literally to pay for my dinner. I had no other. And even to this day, I'm not a boxing fan. People are like, "Yeah, you know, so-and-so at 135 pounds. I'm like, "Yeah, I don't follow it. I'm not a fight fan. It actually causes me to have a visceral reaction when I watch fights now, because I've been through so many of them at that point. You know, at the end of my career, it was 15 pro fights, 2 world titles. I mean, I had 5 knockouts. I've never been knocked out, but I've had my bell rung before, probably knocked out on my feet if I'm totally being transparent. So boxing was totally just a survival. But when you're pretty and you can also fight, you get more fight opportunities, because the dudes who buy the tickets, because boxing's a business like anything else, they don't want to see 2 ugly girls go at it. They want to see 2 pretty girls beat the crap out of each other. Well, you got to be able to talk to the press. You got to get butts in the seats. And that's why I was so good. That's why I fought all over the world, because I could get butts in the seat and I was fun to watch, but it was never some sort of a passion. It was only about the money.
That's crazy. And now that you say it, like, absolutely, it makes sense. I mean, yeah, you do want to see like good looking people in the ring, right? Like obviously. Yeah, I get it. So I got to ask you, because we grew up kind of similar, right? We both grew up on a ranch. I know we talked about this previous. And I think most people who grew up on a ranch, I know sometimes there's like this misconception of like, "Oh, you grew up on a ranch. You must be rich. You must come from this family of money." Yeah. It's like, no, like most ranchers are dirt floor poor, right? Like literally in our first house, part of our floor was dirt. And I know for me growing up that way, it was like, I nothing against my parents, right? My mom listens. Mom, you know, I love you. But it's like, I don't want my kids to grow up that way. I don't want to live that way. So, I mean, was there part of it like pushing you into boxing to where it's like, I'm going to do anything I can to keep from just being poor?
Yeah, possibly that could have been it for sure. I know that I have been poor up until I was 40 years old. I've come from this lack mentality. My parents always said to us girls, and again, I mean, if my parents ever listen to this too, they did the best they could. I mean, they raised us in a loving home. We all loved Jesus, and it was a great, loving, balanced home. But their mentality was, well, you get what you get and you don't pitch a fit. And so I grew up with this lack mentality, this very poor mentality. You whatever happens to you happens to you. There's nothing you could do about it. So I had to really fight against all that, the adversity that comes with being a poor kid. And my parents, even to this day, still have a poor mentality. I had to totally reverse all of that. So yeah. And I was surrounded by kids that were poor, and we were all poor. And like, I just didn't, it was really a lot of years. And finally, Natasha, my very first business coach, said to me, "If you want to reach millions and make millions, you've got to get past this lack mentality that you have." So I had a lot of mental work to do.
So what was that process like? Because now, like, you know, like with my mom, she's gone on and she's one of the top realtors now in the state of Idaho. Like, she was able to change it later in life too, right? Like, she went from, you know, my dad ranching and her waiting tables in Riggins, Idaho, right? Making at the time like $2 an hour, because with tips, it would get you over minimum wage, to now like doing very well. And I know for her, it was like, I'm not trying to take too much credit, but we're like, "Mom, you need to get your real estate license. Like, you can't be waiting tables till you're 70 years old. Like, you got to do something." Was there somebody or something? I mean, obviously you'd mentioned Natasha, who I know and is awesome. I mean, was that kind of the push, or was there other things that were leading you that way?
It was 100%. I guess I should say 100%. It was Natasha that brought it to my attention that I had a lack mentality, and it made me aware that I was holding myself back from achieving more. And I just couldn't even imagine, I couldn't imagine being rich or being, having money or not struggling, but I also could feel that there was more meant for me. So she was the first one that brought it to my attention. And all she said was, you need to get control of this. You need to get past this. And so that's not what she does. Well, at least back then, back in 2016, that's not what she did. She didn't work with me on my lack mentality. So my next step was, how am I going to get rid of this? And then I said, I got to surround myself with rich people. Well, I didn't know anybody rich except for my husband. My husband and I, Miles, we do not share money at all. And it's a marriage that works for us, but a lot of people think it's a funny marriage. That's okay. And he retired. He was an executive. He was the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, and he retired in his 40s, and he has money. And I was like, well, he's got money. I want money. How do rich people act? And I started watching him, and I started picking his brain and trying to, like, what do you do? What do you think? What's going through your mind? Because I didn't have rich friends to try to hang around. I didn't know what rich people did. And I just started to read books about him, and I had to get over this, what I was saying to myself. And I said, well, what do you say to yourself, to Miles? And he would say, well, I don't say that. I say this. And so I started to change my self-talk, but I learned that from watching other people who did not have a lack mentality, and they don't have lack at all. And I was realizing there's a real big difference between me and those people and me and Miles. And so I really started to latch on to people who had money and who were making a difference, and tried to emulate what they were doing.
Did you ever feel, and maybe this is a weird question, but I'm always curious, right? When you go from kind of like that mindset and you change it, was there guilt around it? Like when you started having abundance, or was it just like, no, this is awesome. I'm getting kind of what I deserve, right? I've worked my ass off and I've got here and I'm making money and I deserve it. Or was there any type of like guilt of like seeing maybe some of your friends who had stayed poor, that you knew for years? Like, was there ever any like, I don't know, how do you reconcile that?
I had absolutely zero guilt. I have paid my dues in this industry. I have busted my butt. I am self-made. I've got a good team around me, but I am self-made. I have earned my stripes. So zero guilt whatsoever. I don't deal with guilt about anything. I'm just not one of those people that it just doesn't eat me up inside. Not at all. I let something go and that's it. And so people around me, I am a firm believer there is enough for all of us to go around. And I've got a sister. I've got not the one that works for me, but another sister that isn't really a part of my life. And she has, she was given the same opportunities as we all were. She was raised in the same household with the same parents and the same discipline and the same expectations. And look what I did. And look what my other sister, Carrie, did. She's got a master's degree in nursing. She's the CEO of my company. She's incredible. Wife, mother, runs a big farm, like incredible. And then we have our sister who struggles and has struggled for her entire life. So we all had the same opportunity. And that's what I feel about everybody. I mean, I know that not everybody has had the same opportunity, but in this country, there ain't no excuses. Are you kidding me? Like, everybody can excel. It is not a good old boys game anymore. I mean, there is equal opportunity for everybody. And I know that I'm going to get pushback from that, but I call bull crap on people that try to play that victim bull crap mentality and act like, well, I tell you what, I just can't be bologna. Cause man, I was on Idaho State food stamps. I had to take out a loan for $100,000 to get Code Red up and running and write my book. Like, I have been kicked in the teeth. I was beat up by a guy that I first got with when I was first out of high school, beat up, left, dragged behind a car. Like, it was just awful. I have had my share of crap and I still excelled. So anybody, I just don't deal with that baloney when people act like, well, oh, I feel sorry for so-and-so, or no, I zero guilt and I have zero pity for anybody.
So do you think that was something that you were born with? Because this is another thing that always fascinates me, like kind of the nature nurture, right? Do you think you were born with it, or was that something that you developed?
I thought about this a lot because people say, are you a natural born entrepreneur? There are some people, my nephew Chase is a natural born entrepreneur. He just has just got such spark, and you've seen people with that spark, you know, maybe one of your kids or something, and people listening and you got that one kid that just shows that spark. I don't know if I had that spark or if I learned it. I know I had to learn a lot, you know, starting in 2016, when I took my company from food stamps to 10 million, I had to learn a lot as far as business goes and how to handle employees. But I think because I bought my first horse at such an early age and made monthly payments and I held down a job and I've never not had a job, I think I had something in me already that was kind of that inclined to be an entrepreneur. But I'm really a rule follower. I mean, I would have been great in the military. I do better when I've got very clear boundaries for myself. And so I don't know how I got to where I am. I just know that there, I have a huge passion for obesity. We're 88% obese and sick in this country. And I knew that I've got a big enough mouth and I'm willing to flap my yib enough to get the message out there. And I got enough backing. And so I just kind of took a chance. I got big balls. I put myself on the lies and I put it all out there.
Well, and that was where I was going to go next. So with fitness, it is such a hard space, right? Because everybody, I mean, I've lost 30 pounds now, so I'm probably qualified to at least think of myself as being a fitness expert, right? But it is, it's so crowded and there's so much noise and there's just all this stuff. Like when you were getting into it, did you ever see it being this big or was it more of a passion or what did kind of get you started down that path?
Well, I'm not in fitness now, but when I actually was in fitness, when I was a trainer, I still had that lack mentality. So I was really living kind of paycheck to paycheck, client to client. I didn't have a vision for more or for bigger. And I knew the fitness industry was saturated. I knew everybody and their brother, you know, wanted to do it. And I knew that there were some crappy trainers out there and some crappy fitness experts out there too. And I knew that I wasn't one. I was good. And I recognized that there were things about me that did make me stand out above the rest. I might not have been the most ripped girl in the gym, but I was able to effectively communicate with my clients. So I saw myself as a little bit different in the fitness industry and I stood out. But if I could go back and do it again, I would have really stood out. Like I would have structured things a little differently and I would have really made my mark. But that's what I'm doing now in the weight loss industry is I am standing out. And it's, in my opinion, the weight loss industry is the most saturated industry on the planet. So I am definitely working hard to stand out and get noticed in when there's so much noise. So yeah, I didn't see it back then for what it was going to be. It, you know, I've always just kind of known everybody was kind of sick and fat and needed help. But now I really see it really clear now that I'm 45 and much farther in this game.
So let me ask you this, because I think this is a fascinating question. And I hear business people talk about it, and I'm sure it's the same way in weight loss. If you're going to be in weight loss, do you have to be ripped? Like if you're going to be a coach or a guru or a mentor, like how fit do you have to be to do that?
I have stood on many stages and spoken on many podcasts about this exactly, you know, in one of my top three things. If you want to excel in your industry, you have got to be a product of your product. Ain't nobody want to lose weight from a fat weight loss coach. It ain't even working for you, Karen. No, if you are selling online Bible courses, you don't need to be out at the bar till 2 o'clock in the morning grinding up on some dude. All right, if you want to be a life coach, and I say that like this because I got my reservations about life coaches. You don't need to have a restraining order against you. And you got four babies with four different baby daddies. Come on. You've got to walk the talk. You have to be. So do I need to be ripped? I don't think I'm ripped. I don't think, but I'm also not in fitness. I'm in weight loss. So ripped isn't really a requirement for weight loss. I don't believe, but absolutely. I need to be healthy. I need to be at a healthy weight. I need to not be chugging half a case of Diet Coke a day. If I have got to practice what I preach, because the market will chew you up and spit you out. If you are a phony, people can spot a phony from a mile away. You know, a beach body coach. Well, what is that? You're sitting around. You're not even following your own advice. you know,
my favorite, the message from the Beachbody coaches that you get sometimes, right? Like, oh, I've got this great thing. And you, and for me, I always get, I play with it. So it's like, I want to see your profile picture before. And it's like, what the hell? You're not coaching anything. I don't know. I'm probably gonna get in trouble.
So you agree with me then, Derek, yes. You agree with me.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, and it's always been the thing. So just in like 100% transparency, one of the things that I want to do at some point, having worked with Russell and seen it, is I want to have a business mastermind, right? I loved the power of Russell's Inner Circle Mastermind and just the people that were there and the synergy and the ideas and everything else. But I kept saying, and you know, like me and Jess had these conversations, and it's like, we should just do it. And I was like, nope, not yet. She's like, well, why wouldn't you? Like, you know as much about business as anybody, like working with Russell and ClickFunnels and all that stuff. You know all these people. And I was like, because until I've done it, I would feel like a phony. And so like, that's part of it with Crosso Meets, right? Is it's like, it's going great, but it's still not big enough yet to where I would feel comfortable being like, hey guys, come and learn from me, with me. So there's going to come that point. And I know there's people like, oh, that's a scarcity mindset. No, it's just, I don't want to BS people, right? Like, people will find you out. Like you said, if you're saying that you're a business guru and you're not even running a successful business, there's a special place in hell for you, in my opinion. That's just me, right? But I mean, it's just disingenuous. And so I can see it probably in the next year being there. But until we get there, like, I would feel bad about it. And so I love hearing you say that too, because here's the other thing too, I want to ask you, like, do you get grief for like talking about fat people? I'm sure you do, right?
I think people are used to the way I deliver my message. I get my share of hate mail, but it's not for that reason. And people just know I am so upfront about how I am right off the bat that nobody's surprised. I say the word fat. I have been fat myself, and we have been coddled. We have been handheld. We have been singing Kumbaya way too long. And 88% of this country is sick and fat, and we have got a serious, serious problem. So somebody's got to effing say it, and I'm willing to say it, and it gets people's attention, but it turns off the wrong person. Like, it turns off people that don't need to be my client. They can go to Weight Watchers. They can go to Beachbody. They can go to Isogenic Cleanse. If you want to get your weight off and keep it off, you come to me. I will love you. I will link arms with you, but I am not going to coddle you. I'm not going to spoon feed you. You've got to take responsibility for yourself. No more victims. There are no victims in this room. I'm not going to stand that. I mean, you've got someone that's been 60 pounds overweight for decades, and they got an A1C through the roof. You got a CPAP, loads of medication, and their knees and hands hurt all the time. Like, we're at a real, I'm here to deliver the straight talk, and sometimes this is what they need.
No, I totally agree. Well, it's funny. The other day, my brother's like, you just hate fat people, don't you? It's like, no, because we were just talking about like overweight. And I was like, no, not at all. It's almost like the way that I look at it is that it bums me out, right? Because, and kind of like we were talking before we started recording, but I look at your body as kind of being like a weapon, not like a weapon to go fight people necessarily, like you did at one point, but it's a weapon as well. And you don't know this, and I talked a little bit about it, but so last Saturday, we had a super close call on the river with my son, Riley, almost drowned. And then I almost drowned trying to pull him out. And then my brother almost drowned trying to get us. It was awful. Right. But the funny thing is like, looking back at it now, kind of being like a week away from it, I was like, you know, had I been 60, 80 pounds overweight, I think we both would have died. Like, the only reason why I think I was able to keep him above water long enough is because, and I'm not saying I'm some badass shredded dude, but I'm in good enough physical shape because I work out 5-6 days a week that my weapon, my body, right, was able to handle that stress and all of the, you know, anxiety and everything else that was going on. Like, I feel like I had trained for it. And so sometimes I see people who are morbidly obese, and it's like, your body's not a weapon. It's a hindrance. You know, like, it hurts to walk when you're super overweight. Like, I've been fat most of my adult life, like 20, 30 pounds overweight, and your knees hurt. Like you said, you can't walk up a flight of stairs without being out of breath. And so it's like, you're not free at that point. And so like, he gives me grief about, oh, you hate fat people. No, it's like, I want to help people who are overweight. Yeah. Like, and I'm not even in the fitness or weight loss or any of that. I'm just like, what can I maybe do on my platform to help somebody? Like, I don't know. What if I lost 20 pounds? Would my knees stop hurting? Could I walk a little easier? Could I play with my kids a little longer and not be so tired when they ask me if you'll come play volleyball? Like, one thing me and my daughter do almost every night, we're playing volleyball in the yard. And I think if I was 50 pounds heavier, my buddy would be on the couch watching TV because I'd be tired from the day. And instead, I still have energy, and I love that. And so like, I love what you do because I feel like some of us, at least me, need to be called out, right? And I see that you can do that, but you do it in a lovingly way. So I know that was kind of a long story, but
that's how tough love works. Tough love only works if they feel the love first. You have to feel the love. They got to feel that love. And somehow, some way, Derek, I don't know how I do it. I come across people, feel the love, and then they get their ass kicked.
Well, I think people respect you more, right? They're willing to get their ass kicked if they know you're doing it from a place of love.
Yes, totally. And by the way, my neighbor and my friend, Chris Gethin, he's wonderful and he's a bodybuilder and he's just great. He says he has an accent. I can't do his accent, but he says, be harder to kill. And I always think about that, like be harder to kill, Christy. And it always goes in my mind, like get to the gym, do what you got to do because you need to be harder to kill. I ain't going down without a fight.
Yeah. That is so cool. I want a shirt that says that.
Yeah, I'll get you one.
Do you have one?
Yeah, I've got one.
I'll switch you out shirts then because I want that. But no, absolutely. That's so true. Because when I think about fitness and when I'm doing my workouts and stuff, especially this last week, it's weird how it's even shifted again for me after having gone through that experience. Because sometimes it's like, dude, what are you training for? You're freaking 38 years old. You got kids. You got all this stuff going on. Like, what are you training for? And it's like that moment in that river, like that's what I'm training for. And I never would have expected that to, I mean, it was the most normal day and it was just within 10 seconds, just everything changed. And it's like, that's why I train. Like I realize I got to get my ass to the gym every day because if that happens again, I better be able to answer the call again. You know what I mean? Right. And so it was crazy, but so I want to talk to you though about your 10 pound takedown. Cause I think that's kind of what just blew you up, right? Yep.
Yeah. So, Russell had me speak at Funnel Hacking Live in 2019.
Yeah. Are you there?
Because of my funnel.
Yep. So what is the 10 pound takedown? Like if someone's sitting there being like, I got 10 pounds, maybe 20, maybe 50. Like, obviously I know it's kind of a whole process, but like, what's the overview? If someone wants to come and check it out, what can they expect?
Yeah. It's so simple. It's you can lose 10 pounds in 30 days without shakes, pills, diet foods, or exercise. So you come into the challenge, you pay the $47. You come into the challenge, you spend 30 days with me. I come live to you every morning. I teach you something new. You turn in your weight at the beginning, you turn in your weight at the end. We have winners, the top three people who lose the highest percentage of body weight, they win. And you learn and you unlearn the brainwashing and the crap that has taken place that over the last 70 years of our life, we have just been brainwashed to believe lies. And so my job is to get you convinced that my way of real food, water, and sleep is the right way. And that's why I spend every day teaching people about this, not just saying, hey, do it. There you go, Karen. I actually teach them.
So basically for a little over $1 a day, provided they do what you tell them for 30 days, they're probably going to lose more than 10 pounds in all honesty, right?
The average is a 12.2.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense to me, which is a good number. I think for 30 days, it's not like dropping harmful amounts, but it gets them on the right track, I would imagine.
Yes. Yeah, awesome. Absolutely. When you dump, you know, we eat meat, vegetables, nuts, eggs, seeds, seafoods, and fat. And so we're dumping the sugar, we're dumping the carbs, we're getting you off the dairy, we're getting you off anything that's inflammatory. Well, people dump a lot of water because for every gram of carb, your body hangs on to almost 4 grams of water. So you dump the carbs, you dump the water, and people are like, it's just water weight. But that water weight has to come off and it matters. You know, 3, 5, 7 pounds coming off, things zip up a little easier. Things button a little easier. You start to feel fantastic. So that weight, you're dropping over 10 pounds for the month. It's not just water weight. It really is legit weight. And then it gets your body going to where you switch over to burning fat for fuel instead of sugar for fuel. And you're on your way.
Well, and once I eliminated sugar, we talked about it. I'm one of those crazy people. That's kind of the carnivore way of eating. But you feel lighter, right? Like even if your pants aren't fitting lighter yet, it just seems like for me, once I got away from sugar, it was just like it's weird to explain maybe, but it's like my insides just felt like emptier or lighter or whatever. And so I would imagine people are feeling that within 4 weeks.
Yeah, they're feeling that as soon as they get through detox, they go usually detoxes 4 to 7 days. And that eighth day, they wake up feeling freaking fantastic. The fog lifts, the brain fog lifts, the hands start feeling better because you don't have that crap. So yeah, you can start feeling better as early as tomorrow morning if you just start drinking your water right now and you get, you know, you turn off your phone a little earlier and you get in bed a little earlier tonight. Yeah, there it is. But you really start feeling like you're walking on sunshine on day 8. It's incredible how quick it works because your body wants to heal itself.
Do you warn people? Because I think I told you this, but so day 8 for me was the worst when I came off of like sugar and carbs. I thought I was going to die. I swear. Yeah. I ended up texting my cousin's wife, Paige, and was like, I know you've done keto before and I've heard this is called like the keto flu and your body's like detoxing, but I actually might be dying. So like, what should I do?
Yeah.
Do you hear people go through and tell anybody this to scare them? But it's like, you can literally feel your body dumping these poisons out of you. It's crazy.
Sugar is 8 times more addictive than heroin. And so when you're coming off of sugar, it's very, very real. Depending on if you're coming off of 5 Pepsis a day, I mean, you're going to feel super, you're going to feel like you need to go into a detox unit. I mean, I have seen some horrific detoxing. So yes, we warn people, yes, they're going to feel crappy. But if they even put one Hershey's Kiss in their mouth off that coworker's desk, they start the process all over again. So we encourage them to push through the pain and we give them plenty of heads up, like warning, you are going to feel crap for 4 to 7 days. I promise you it's going to get better. It's awful. I mean, it is awful, especially if you're doing the Krispy Kreme and Caramel Macchiato and Cake Pops and ordering Domino pizza 4 times a week and you're coming off of all that, Katie, bar the door. It's going to be rough, but there is light on the other side.
Well, it was so crazy to me because I didn't expect it. And it was just like, I don't feel good. And then next thing you know, it's like, I think this is like, I've never done any hard drugs, but you know, or addicted or any of that to that, but it's like, this has got to be what someone addicted to heroin feels like.
Yep.
Like sweats, yeah. And just sick. And oh, it was terrible.
Terrible. Oh. Yeah.
But it was honestly like, it kind of reaffirmed what I was doing. And hopefully I'm sure the people that are going through your program are the same way, because as soon as you feel that, you're like, oh my gosh, what was I putting in? So I want to ask you too, Christy, because I saw somebody, and I don't remember what agency it was, put out a new food pyramid that actually had like sugar as part of it. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, I've done so many, my YouTube channel, I release a video 6 days a week on my YouTube channel. I talked about the food pyramid. It is the biggest disaster in our government history. And it's driven by industry. It's driven by money. It is not driven by science. I mean, you watched when the food pyramid came out, I think we first started talking about it in 1984. We released the first one in 1993, and obesity rates and heart disease just started to skyrocket. So you can't take in 9 to 11 servings of grain a day and act like that everything's going to be okay. I mean, man, if I have any kind of grains a day, I feel like garbage. And the bottom line is the grains are not the same. Things are not the same as when Jesus was on the planet. We have bastardized our food. It's not good. So this food pyramid is not driven. And you look at the people on our USDA board of directors, they're right. All sick and fat. Like, they're not walking the talk. And then they got sugar on there. Oh, believe me, 100% industry driven. And guys, you've got to be your own advocate. Do your own research. Do not listen to our bull crap government officials. We are out for ourselves here. We've got to look out for ourselves. They're not looking out for us.
No. Well, and I think that was part of the reason why I wanted to go carnivore, because it's basically like, I'm just going to eliminate everything. Not that I'm going to only eat meat for the rest of my life. I never intended that when I started, but it was like, I'm going to eliminate everything. See how I feel. Oh, I feel great. Okay, perfect. Like, what if I eat this then? Or what if I eat that? But the way I looked at it is that I ate so bad for so long that I don't think I had any clue what would make me feel bad versus what would make me feel good, because it was just always kind of garbage. And so now, like, I've reintroduced a couple things, and I'm not saying I won't eat vegetables at some point. I don't know. I might not, but no, but like, in reality, it just made me realize like everything I've been told about fitness was an absolute lie. And like, I know people have different takes on things, but it's like, fiber was a big one. Like, you have to have all this fiber. It's like, you really don't. You don't have to have fiber. Like, you literally don't have to have anything other than meat. Now, am I going to die of a heart attack in 4 days from now? Maybe. Right. But like, the way I see it is, it's like, I've lost weight. I feel way better. I'm working out better. Like, I sleep way, like, it's unbelievable how much better I sleep. But that, what, my cholesterol is high, so now I'm dying. Like, it doesn't make any sense. When I was 30 pounds overweight and eating other stuff, and my cholesterol was better, I was healthier. Like, none of it made sense to me. Not to go like on the conspiratorial route, but it's just like, obviously what they're saying isn't working, because we're fatter. We're sicker. We're just in more pain. So there's got to be something off about this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's all driven by money. It's all, and they don't have our best interests at heart. And I always say to people, like people say, oh, but you're going to, like my dad, or my dad's got better cholesterol than me, but the man had a heart attack, you know, and he's obese. And like just the other day I got my blood drawn and I didn't even look at my cholesterol. I just looked at my triglycerides. I don't care what my cholesterol says. I don't have any other markers. So I'm with you. The traditionally medically trained doctors, they have it wrong. They were trained in a paradigm that's a pill for every ill. It's a pharmaceutical paradigm and they are wrong. I love medical doctors. Look, if I cut my leg open on a Sawzall, then take me to the ER. Don't take me to a naturopath. Okay. Yeah. Take me to a surgeon. But when it comes to our health, like chronic issues like this, no, don't. I can get weight off people better. Well, my doctor says, no, look at your doctor. What's your doctor doing to help you lose weight? Giving you phentermine pills? No, they don't have it right in this area. I'm with you 100%.
Why do you think it is just money? Or do you think it's because I don't think doctors are evil people. No. You know what I mean? I think they're well-meaning people. But I think also people maybe don't understand that the way kind of doctors grease their wheels, right? Like that's an income stream for them. And they've been told, I'm sure, and trained. And I don't know if this is true. And now we're probably going into like the Joe Rogan territory, maybe, right? But like I'd heard that most medical decisions starts at a board of like five people. I have no idea if this is true, but then it trickles down into the entire system because everyone's like, oh, well, how could it be? That's just a conspiracy. How could it be so controlled? And it's like, well, really, the people making the decisions, there's only a few of them. And so I always wonder, like, what are they allowed to look at versus what is not fundable? You know, like there's hardly any studies around the carnivore diet, like clinical studies. Right. And you ask why, and it's like, well, there's no money to fund it. You know, they're funding all these other studies. And I don't think a lot of people understand kind of how this game works. Have you like dove into that, just kind of doing what you do?
Especially in the last couple of years. Yeah. So you're right. They're highly intelligent, well-meaning people. They don't go into medicine to screw people over. They're going to medicine because they want to help. They're only receiving less than 15 hours of nutrition training in medical school. And what they are receiving is wrong. Yeah. And it's to me, I just cannot believe, I can't wrap my head around that. So I started to really dive into carnivore back in the summer of 2019 when I was at KetoCon and I met Paul Saladino and of course I started Sean Baker and all the people in that space. And it really became clear to me. And then watching these guys get censored, you know, it's just, there's no money in healthy people.
I've seen that Saladino's just been getting censored crazy, yeah. Crazy like for telling people to eat meat. Like what the hell? It's crazy.
And there's no money in healthy people. There just isn't. And I don't want to, I'm not a conspiracy theorist either, but I'm telling you the way that we eat, if we all just get on an animal-based diet, 88% of our metabolic issues will go away. And I don't think they want you to know that, because I think the industry would collapse. The pharmaceutical industry would collapse if we all started eating two meals a day and just eating an animal-based diet and watch everybody get healthy and the food costs go down. And shoot, I don't think they want to see that happen.
No. And like, I hate it when people just conspiracy theorists, it's like, well, it's not if it's true. Like,
right.
Like, I mean, you can see what I've gone through. And so I don't know, like my blood pressure is better. I'm sure my cholesterol is higher. But again, like a lot of the people who really dive into this is like cholesterol doesn't matter. It's more about what the cholesterol binds to. And if you have nothing for the cholesterol to bind to in your arterial walls, like you're going to be okay. And so there is kind of that part of it also of just kind of learning more. So I guess I know we're kind of getting closer to the end here. Let me ask you this, like, do you see yourself doing this forever? Is this kind of what you see yourself, or what's the next step, maybe whenever that next step is?
Yeah, I know. That's a great question. I've been recently really asking myself this. We're always pivoting Code Red. Recently, I've had some test results back, and I don't mind telling you guys all this, that really shows some pretty high stress levels in my life, and it's not good. And I work all the time. We have a large staff of people. I mean, it's just that it's a big company and it takes a lot of moving parts. And I don't want that. You know, I feel it. I feel the pressure. I put a lot of pressure on myself. I have another book coming out and I don't think so. So I think we're going to pivot Code Red and really make it a lot more. We've got an app that at the time that we're recording this, Derek, my app is almost done. It's going to be a standalone app, get off social media, be able to deliver the message of hope and healing through, a little easier way. Right now I'm doing so much coaching and it's just, it's hard on me and it's thousands and thousands of people. So what's next for me, what's next for Code Red is Code Red is going to continue to deliver the message of hope and healing. But for me, I'm going to be backing off a little bit and taking care of my health a little bit more. And I would love to do more speaking. I would love to speak to entrepreneurs and I would love to speak in weight loss. I would love to get on like the Mary Kay stage. Those are my ladies. Those are all my, I just love like the, in Dallas, like big conventions, you know, and I'm a good speaker. I'm dynamic and funny and engaging. And I'd love to get in front of a large audience because my only heart's desire, people, someone said, oh, you just want to be famous. I don't want to be famous because I have a lot of, I'm very secure in myself. I have a husband that loves me. I got two dogs that are great. I love myself. I want the message to be spread. And the more I can, I mean, I dream about bigger ads. People say, you know, what's next? You got a $10 million company. I said, $100 million company. And they said, why do you want so much money? So I can run bigger ads. So people can hear the message of hope and healing. So really any way I can spread that message is on my mind 24/7.
No, at some point, I mean, you have to be able to take a step back, right? Cause I know you do a lot of stuff on, and I'm not even like on the other side of with your coaching. And I see like you kind of have to stay in front of people, right? It is a competitive, brutal space. Yes. So are you going to, cause you started a certification program as well, right?
I have my coaches get certified and I handpick coaches to be able to certify them, but I've got all the coaches that I want. So I'm not doing any of that.
Okay. Okay, cool. So then you're going to be out there speaking. Obviously that's going to happen because if I know anything about you so far, if you say you're going to do it, it's going to happen. Yeah. What do you see yourself doing in like 20 years from now, 30 years from now, like still being an advocate or do you want to go retire on a ranch next to us up here in Riggins or what?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I just come and ride your horses. I know I know better than to own my own horse, you know, but I don't know about 20, 30 years, but I know that Miles and I, you know, this is all before COVID. Miles and I have gone to Europe twice a year. Every year we've been to Europe like 11 times. I love to travel. I want to travel more. I want to travel with my dogs more and I want to spend more time with him and them. My husband is quite a bit older than me and I don't want to miss any time with him. And I love to travel with him. So I can't see myself. I would love for a big company to come along and buy Code Red and just make Code Red a subsidiary of them. And maybe they just, I stay on as the face of Code Red, but even, you know, my face is going to get old and someday the Mohawk is going to get old. And I don't want my face to be the brand of Code Red. I want other people. So we're pivoting away from Christy's face and Christy's Mohawk into making it about the brand a little bit more about the community. So I don't really think I'll be grinding like this for too much longer. I'm not saying that Code Red is going anywhere. We've got so much momentum. We're going to keep this whole thing going, but I can see myself backing off, just doing maybe just writing books, just speaking at a few select events a year and just living off the money that I've earned and not, it's not worth it to me to be stressed and to be so busy that my life goes by. Cause it's going by so quick. I'm already 45 and I'm ready to slow down a bit on that.
Sure. No, I get it. I watched Russell kind of go through the same thing with ClickFunnels, right? Because when, as he is the self-ascribed dancing monkey, well, everybody attributes you to the software, or in this case, you to Code Red. And at some point, if you want to take a step back, that can actually hurt the business. So right. Yeah, it's a delicate process. It seems like, I don't have that problem yet, but soon, right? But no, so then I guess like, just to kind of start wrapping up, because I love just your attitude and your energy. It's so infectious. And I get why like you have been so successful. You've got the 10X award in the background. Like, if you don't know what that is, go look it up. I'm not going to brag too much on Christy. It means that she's done very well. But with that, do you look back, like maybe in your younger years and when you were kind of in like the fitness and maybe just first starting out, like, do you feel like there's anything that maybe you were telling people then that has changed now? Cause I'm always fascinated by the way that these health things change. Do you feel like there's been anything maybe that you used to teach that you don't anymore, or maybe something that you used to think you know, but it's like, now I know better, or anything like that, maybe that people could take some insight from?
I certainly, in the fitness realm, I used to have, gosh, 7 or 8 certifications. And man, I do not know what I'm doing anymore. If you look at these fitness people, like the fitness has changed. And people contact me all the time and they say, Christy, will you write a program for me? No way. Go get someone who knows what they're doing. So I don't even dabble in fitness anymore. I go to the gym. I do my own thing. I know it works for me, but that is all evolving. In weight loss, yeah, there are things that I used to do that I don't do anymore. And it's just a matter of having over 50,000 people at the time we're recording this come through my program and just freaking learning. For example, I used to let people have cheese, and in weight loss mode, cheese will stop your weight loss. I used to let people have dairy. Dairy is highly inflammatory. So there are little things that I have used to do that I don't allow people to do anymore. I used to let people have 3 meals a day. Now everybody eats 2 meals a day. I used to let people eat, by 6. Now people on my custom program, they're done eating by 3. And so I am a lot more strict. I'm also more strict with goal weights that I choose for people. I don't allow people to be as heavy as they want to be. If somebody is, I have a formula that I use to make up goal weights. I'm much harder on clients now because we know now that going into old age, carrying extra body fat and extra weight on your joints and on your back and on your hips and knees and ankles, it's just not good. And so I really push people hard, way harder than I used to get down to that goal weight and stay there. And I have a real strong maintenance program. And so I'm shifting a lot of my energy into keeping the weight off, because we don't have a weight loss problem in this country. We have a weight regain problem. Mm-hmm. So I want to prevent the regain. And so I have learned a lot, and I've shifted the way I've thought, and I quit pushing vegetables so much. Oh, you got to have vegetables, got to have vegetables. And now instead I'm like, you got to have organ meats. You got to have, where's your liver? Where's your liver? Where's your liver? Always asking people, well, you can have liver if you don't want to have broccoli. And so I'm always trying to get people to get there, because you're right about fiber. You're right that it beats up our system and we don't need it. But switching someone from the standard American diet to carnivore is just, it's not realistic. So I switch people from the standard American diet to Code Red, and then I offer them carnivore when they get into maintenance as a possible option. So yeah, there's a lot I've learned that I've pivoted away from, but we still believe in real food, water, and sleep. That'll never change.
Well, I love that, because there's some people out there still teaching the same thing today that they were 10 years ago and they were 20 years ago, and things evolve. Like, new data comes out and new research does come out. And yes, we can argue about some of the validity of some of the studies, but there's also, like you said, when you have 50,000 people go through, it's like, I don't need a scientific study to know what I've seen and be able to adjust from there. So as we kind of start to wrap up, I want to ask you to pull out your crystal ball. Like, what do you think the future looks like for us as, let's just say, Americans? I'm not going to go worldwide. Do you think we hit a breaking point and people are like, we're just over this? Or do you think, like, I hate to say it, but like, do you just think we'll just kind of keep getting fatter and sicker and further away from where we should be?
The average weight gain in 2020 was between 26 and 41 pounds. The problem that we're recording this in the third quarter of 2021, and people are not getting it off. And so it's really scary. And nobody talked about weight, and nobody talks about health during COVID. And so it further solidifies the fact that our government is not out to help us. I mean, I don't want to sound like, you know, I'm a pretty conservative girl, but I'm telling you right now, they're not out for our best interest. And it's going to take, in the future and moving forward, it's going to take a grassroots movement like you, like me, like Paul, like Sean, like Ken Berry, like Thomas DeLauer, all the heavy hitters in this industry, Jason Fung. We're all going to have to come together, and we're all going to have to spread our message the way we're doing it now. Everybody in their little pocket of the world spreading this message. And one by one, the clients will say, wait a minute, you're saying my cholesterol is high, but my triglycerides are low, but I got to go on a statin when I feel better than I ever have. I mean, you're telling me I'm overweight, but I have 6-pack abs just because the bullcrap BMR tells me, or the BMI chart on your doctor's office wall. This doesn't make sense. And it's going to be the patients pushing back against the doctors. It's going to be us pushing back against our government and saying, we're not going to stand here. And the market will deliver. That's how keto got to be so popular. The market said, we want a healthy, sugar-free brownie. So they delivered keto brownies. I don't know if it's all that healthy. I'm just saying at least it didn't have any sugar in it, you know? Yeah. So the market will answer the call of people, but I think people underestimate themselves. But each of us together, doing our part, we are going to, I believe I will watch the diet industry crumble and fall in my lifetime as people hear the message and the truth.
I agree. I think that people will, because it seems like people, especially Americans, it's like you push. And then finally people are like, okay, that's enough. Like, we're tired of this. And so maybe it's the optimistic side of me. I think that people will start to wake up and be like, you know what? This isn't working. You know what I mean? Like, you see it in other industries and everything else. And it's like, why would the weight loss or the pharmaceutical industry be any different? You know, I remember family members years ago, like they would go to the doctor and be like, you know, it'd be nice to lose some weight. And they're just passing out diet pills like they're Pez, you know? And we look at that now and we're like, that's crazy. Like, I don't think that really happens, but you have a bunch of people have ephedrine and heart attacks and everything else, and it has to correct itself. And so I kind of look at it this way too, to where it's like, we measure all of these things within our fitness or within our weight and all of this. And it's like, yeah, but it doesn't really matter. Like, these are the things that matter, you know? Like, you can literally equate like extra pounds to like early morbidity, right? Or early mortality. Yes. And it's however you get there, as long as you're doing it, eating like nutrient dense foods, like how can you tell me that's unhealthy? It's just wild to me.
Yeah, it's just healthy people doesn't make, they make a lot of sense, but they don't make a lot of dollars. And I'm willing to go head to head. I'm willing to sacrifice my life for this reason, for this cause, for the greater good. And you got a lot of people that are heavy hitters that are willing to do the same thing, that are willing to put their necks on the line to spread this message. And people are going to, one by one, they're going to start realizing that their doctors are wrong. And again, please, doctors, I am not against the doctors. I really am not. But I'm against the traditionally medically trained paradigm of the medical school and what it's based around and how they teach their doctors. But they're going to say, hey, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. And one by one, we will rise up. One by one, we will do this.
Well, that was what was so interesting when I had Sean Baker on. You know, he's a doctor. Mm-hmm. And just talking to him about the process and kind of when he walked away from it, because he was just like, not only did they not teach this, they didn't want me helping my patients by eating. At that time, he was more keto based before he went kind of full carnivore. And it was just like, it was just so perplexing to me. It's like, so you're telling me that you were helping people and then they basically came in and told you to stop telling people that? Like, how freaking crazy is this? You know, like, oh, wow.
And I fear the bigger Code Red gets, the more of a target I'll have on my back. And it's going to happen maybe to me, maybe I'll get audited or maybe I'll get shut down or I'll say something wrong and I'll get targeted. And that's just the risk I'm willing to take. I just don't care. They have to know the truth. People have to know the truth.
No, I love it. I love it. Well, obviously the podcast, I love to talk about kind of liberation mindset. We've had an awesome conversation, I think, about just kind of looking at different ways of eating and fitness and everything else, lifestyle, kind of like we talked earlier too, right? Like, If you're feeling good, if you're a little lighter, your lifestyle is better. Like, say I'm fat shaming all you want, but like, it is easier for me to move today than it was a year ago. Like, it just is. I can touch my toes easier because my belly isn't in the way. Like, I know the freedom that it comes and the lifestyle part of it. But what I'm going to talk to you about now is the third thing, which is legacy. So obviously you've helped over 50,000 people. You've spoken on some of the biggest stages. Funnel Hacking Live is one of the biggest, you know, marketing conferences there is. Like, you've been there. I guess maybe when it all wraps down and you're sitting there in your place, you know, wherever that may be, what do you want the legacy of Christy to be?
That's a great question, because so much of my identity is tied up into Code Red, and I want that to be I want that to be a chunk of it. I want Code Red to be the one that I was remembered by. I could die tomorrow. I know I'm going to heaven. I know I don't have any, you know, and I could be fine with the amount of people I've helped. And so I know that I want to be a chunk of it. I want that to be a chunk of it, of the fact that my program has brought hope and healing to so many. And that's just the people that I've had come through my challenge, over 50,000. That's not even including people who bought my book and that listen to the podcast and who've lost weight just from other means. My other legacy, I think that people forget that I'm just Christy. They just know me as Code Red, and I'm a wife and I'm a dog mom. I'm a pet parent. I'm an auntie, and I love kids and I love to horseback ride and I love to, you know, I love to lift weights and stuff. So I want to be known as being a good contributing member of society, as a good person. And I want my husband to be happy with me as a wife. And so I struggle with this whole, well, I'm just Code Red. I don't care. As long as my legacy is Code Red, that's fine. But I also want to be an honest, hardworking person, a good human and a good contributing member of society as well. So I don't know. I kind of battle with that back and forth.
No. And well, I can tell you, just seeing you when you were up here with my kids and the way that you treated them, and like, you can tell that you're doing that. So, you know,
they're good kids, Derek. They're really good kids.
Thank you. They were getting hot that day. I was like, oh, just be good. But no. So, well, thanks, Christy, again for coming on. I mean, literally the hour went by so fast, and that's to me how I always know it's a good episode. So right. I love it. But yeah, I guess just to wrap up, obviously I know people are going to listen to this. They're going to want to come find you. Obviously you have the book, make sure you guys read that. You know, the Code Red Revolution, but as far as social media goes, like, what's the best place to find you? Where can people follow along if they want to check you out a little bit more?
All of my socials are at Christy Code Red, and spelled without an H. It's just C-R-I-S-T-Y at Christy Code Red. But if you are a podcast listener, like you are obviously right now, then I have a great podcast, Rebel Weight Loss and Lifestyle, if you want to subscribe to me as well. And it's very much just like I'm doing right now. I'm the same Christy now, or you'll see me in a 7-Eleven parking lot, or you'll see me, I'm the same Christy. So I can, that's kind of the best way.
Even hit on your wife if you're not careful.
That's right. Yeah. If she's got a good body, I'm going to tell her.
So make sure you guys go follow at Christy Code Red. Make sure there's no H, C-R-I-S-T-Y at Christy Code Red. Follow her on Instagram. I know she's very active there. Again, get the book, The Code Red Revolution. Christy does all kinds of cool stuff. If you've got a few extra pounds, take her 10-pound takedown, the challenge. I have family members who have done it. Like, it works. It's great stuff. Make sure you guys are going on following Christy. She's going to give it to you straight. She might be a little tough on you, but she does it because she loves you. So, yeah, definitely make sure to check it out. Again, thanks, Christy, so much for coming on. We'll stay in touch. All right.
Thank you, Derek.
I absolutely love having you as a listener of the Primal King podcast. If you don't want to miss out on the great content, then it's time to hit that subscribe button right now. Do not be left behind. And then share your thoughts and feedback with a written review of the show. I read every single one of these, and it helps me make sure I am serving you best. It also allows others to find this content, and it builds this community. Make it an awesome day, and we'll see you next time.